Want to say that we are thankful for your presence this evening, especially those that are visiting. We are thankful for you being here and invite you to come back anytime that you can. Lord willing, we'll be together again on Sunday morning for Bible study at 9:30. This evening, we're going to continue our study in the divided kingdom. We're going to go back to question number 8. I want to kind of talk through some of the events here as we go through Elisha and Elijah and Elijah's time to leave this earth. I want to make note that, you know, Elijah did some great things for the Lord. He was a great prophet of God, did some mighty miracles before the people, tried to bring the people's hearts back to the Lord. But he also got to a point where he was feeling all alone. And wanted to die. But God said, you got work to do. So therefore, Elijah went to work. And we're about to see a point in our story where Elijah's going to leave. He's going to leave in the same fashion that one other person, and only one other person's ever left, and that was Enoch. God's going to take him. But we're going to also note that Elijah is going to be seen again. We see him again in the New Testament. When does he appear in the New Testament? On the Mount of Transfiguration, he appears there with Moses as they're standing there on the mountain with Jesus. So his work is not done, but we're going to see the end of his time come as he's getting prepared to be taken by God. And what a wonderful thing to think about this. God told him, I'm going to take you. And he knew that, and he was prepared for that. So we all need to be prepared for the day that the Lord takes us. So question number 8 was prior to where we got to. We actually were going to get into 9, but I want to go back to 8. As Elijah is about to be taken by God, Elijah asked Elisha what he could do for him. And Elisha made a request. He'd like to get a double portion of his spirit. But I want to kind of lead up to what happened here because Elijah and Elisha are walking together. And of course, as they're walking along, they're going from city to city. And Elijah's telling him, hey, you stay behind. I've got to go here. You stay here. Elisha says, no, I'm not going to leave you. And they go to the next city, and the prophets come up to him and say, you realize that Elijah's going to be taken from you today, right? Yes, yes, yes. Be quiet. Be still. Go to the next city. Elijah says, stay here. I'm going to go on. Again, he goes there, says, nope, I'm not going to leave you. Elijah says, the people, the prophets there say, you know, Elijah's going to be taken from you today, don't you? Yes, yes, I know. So they end up walking towards the Jordan, and as they're going to the Jordan, there's a group of 50 prophets, sons of the prophets, that are there, and they watch them go to the Jordan River. Now, what does Elijah do as he gets to the Jordan River? Okay, he takes his mantle off, folds it, slaps the water's parked, and they walk across on dry land. Now, where have we seen that before? Not the first time this has happened for a man of God for this to be done for them. So they cross the Jordan River. Now, when they get across the Jordan River, this is when Elijah says to Elisha, what do you want from me? What can I give you? What would you request of me? And here's where he makes that request for a double portion of his spirit. Now, as they're walking along, after this conversation, what happens? Okay, so just picture this scene. These two guys are walking along. He's just asking, what would you request of me? I want a double portion of your spirit. The way that he's going to get that is, if you see me taken by God, you'll have it. If you don't see me taken by God, you won't. So you think Elisha had a pretty good reason to stick with Elijah as he's going along? Absolutely. And they're going along, and of course, God's going to take Elijah one way or the other, so he separates them by sending horses and chariots of fire. Now, can you imagine that scene as you're walking along being Elisha? And as they get separated, what takes Elijah away? A whirlwind, a great wind, and Elisha sees that happen. So that's an amazing event, a miraculous event, to see somebody like Elijah, who's lived a great life, taken to be in heaven with his God. Does anybody have any comments they want to add to this event that took place here with Elijah being taken? So after he's gone up, what's remaining? What's left behind? The same mantle that he used to slap the water to separate the waters. So, as we see Elisha taking the place of Elijah as this, now the prophet of God, did he receive the request that he asked for in question number 8? Did he get that request that he asked for?
Yes, he did.
And why? Okay, so yes, he got that request because he saw Elijah taken up as Elijah had said, if you see me go, you'll have a double portion of my spirit. He goes and picks up the mantle, goes to the Jordan River, takes it, slaps the water and says, where is the Lord, the God of Elijah? And what happens to the waters? Separate. And he's able to walk across on dry land. So another amazing event. Same thing just happened now for Elisha like it did for Elijah. So as he crosses over the Jordan, again, who was on the other side watching them leave? 50 sons of the prophets. All right. So they're coming back, or he's coming back across the Jordan. And what do these 50 sons of the prophets do? Yeah, that's the next question, but that it all kind of flows together. They come to Elisha and they realize that Elijah's spirit is now upon Elisha. He is now the prophet of God. And they come and they prostrate themselves to Elisha. Not in a worship fashion, because if it had been a worship fashion, he would have said, no, don't do that. This was a matter of respect. So in respect to Elisha, because now he was going to be the prophet of the Lord. And as they come up, they say, hey, we know how Elijah is, because what was Elijah known for in regards to being here or there? He was hard to find. That's it. He was hard to find. He would go about and sometimes they wouldn't know where he was. I mean, Ahab looked for him for 3.5 years. And never found it. And it was common for him to be up and taken away. And go off to a different place. So these prophets say, hey, let us go find Elijah. What is Elisha's response to that? Don't go. Elisha knew that Elijah was going to be taken by God. He'd been told that by multiple people. He saw it happen. But these prophets, what did they do to Elisha? Pressed him. Pressed him and pressed him. So you can kind of picture the scene. These guys are like, you know how Elijah is. He runs off and he goes and hides and he's gone for days and years and weeks. He got dropped on a mountain somewhere, in a valley somewhere. Let's go look for him. And they just kept pressing and kept pressing until it said Elisha felt ashamed. That's a lot of pressure. So Elisha says, okay, go. So they go and they look, and do they find him? No. He's not to be found. And Elisha says to him, did I not tell you, you didn't need to go? All right, so now we get to that point. Any questions or comments through Elijah being taken and Elisha now taking his place?
One thing that I'm trying to understand here, I don't know if you have any thoughts on it, are, you know, the sons of the prophets here, you know, like you just said, they don't get that Elijah is gone. You know, he's gone to heaven. But then earlier in the chapter, in verse 5, it seems like they have a better understanding of it there. You know, they're asking Elisha, you know, don't you know that the Lord is going to take your master from over you today? Do you have any thoughts on that? Or?
Well, I know that in the first case, he approached Jericho, and then here the sons of the prophets who were at Jericho approached Elisha. This is verse 5 of chapter 2, 2 Kings. You know that the Lord will take away your master from over you today. And he answered, yes, I know, be still. Then Elijah said to him, please stay here, for the Lord has sent me to the Jordan. He says, the Lord lives, and as you yourself live, I will not leave you. So the two of them went on. Now 50 men of the sons of the prophets went and stood opposite them at a distance. So to me, it's probably a different 50 men, not the same ones that was in Jericho, the way that it's worded and read, that I read it here. Anybody else have any thoughts on that? So maybe they didn't have the same insight that the other prophets or the sons of the prophets may have had in regards to what was going to happen to Elijah. But these 50 men that were watching saw it happen. All right, good question. Anybody else? Trevor? Yes, I mean, because he knew who Elijah was, he knew the kind of man Elijah was, and sure, just like with anybody that you see, you have so much respect for somebody and the position that they have, you want to be as good as they are. And that was what his request was. I want to be like you, Elijah. I want to have a double portion of your spirit in zealousness for God and being the prophet of the Lord. Anybody else?
Assumption that they saw him go, that they saw Elijah like Elisha is, or that that was recounted when they figured out he had Elijah's mantle. I guess I'd always pictured that only Elisha saw that. I could be easily wrong, though.
All right, so in verse 15, let's just read it and see what it says. Verse 15 of chapter 2. Now when the sons of the prophets who were at Jericho opposite him saw him, they said, the spirit of Elijah rests on Elisha. And they came to meet him and bowed themselves to the ground before him. They said to him, behold, now there are with your servants 50 strong men. Please let them go and search for your master. Perhaps the spirit of the Lord has taken him up and cast him on some mountain or into some valley. He said, you are not to sin. So, good question. I kind of took it like maybe they could have seen the event take place from where they were at. Very possible that they could not have. It could be that Elisha come over and told them the events that took place. Trevor?
They volunteer that the Spirit of the Lord took him. So I mean, that would suggest that unless we have some conversation not recorded here, they saw at least him being carried away.
That was my inclination when I read through it multiple times. So, but that's a good question. It's a good thought to have and trying to figure it out. So anybody else? All right, so as we move on to question number 12, and again, remember, we got Ahaziah and we got Joram. We're going to have some names that are going to be common between Israel and Judah, so I'm going to try to make sure we keep them separated as we understand and go through this. But after Ahaziah of Israel died, Joram, his brother, Ahaziah has no children. So his brother takes over as king. So this is also Ahab's son. And who did he align himself to fight with against Moab? Okay. So if you recall, as soon as Ahab dies, Moab rebels. And then we see Ahaziah fighting with Moab, making an alliance with Jehoshaphat, but Ahaziah falls through the lattice and he ends up sick. And anyway, we see that now we've got his brother Joram coming in and he's king. Now they're going to go fight against Ahab or against Moab, but he goes against Jehoshaphat again, an alliance that God had already told him more than once. You don't need to make these kind of alliances. But again, we see he does not heed that. And he makes another alliance with this king of Israel. And there's one more king involved here. Who else? King Ahaz. king of Edom. The king of Edom also joins in with Jehoshaphat and Ahaziah so that they can go and fight against Moab. Now, what do we know about Joram? I didn't ask this question in the material, but typically I ask what kind of king this person was. What kind of king was Joram of Israel? Okay. We see a difference between him and Ahaziah, because Ahaziah, of course, worshiped the Baals and did all the things, but Joram did not. He did not worship the Baals. He did still worship the golden calves that Jeroboam set up, but he did not follow after the Baals. So there's a little bit of a difference between the two brothers. And we see that he put away those sacred pillars of Baal, but still stuck to the sins of Jeroboam. All right, but anyway, these kings come together. They make an alliance. They're going to go down and they're going to fight against Moab. Now, as they're going down, who steps up and says, hey, what's about to happen here? Jehoshaphat. Remember before Jehoshaphat asked for a king, asked for a prophet of the Lord to prophesy about what's going to happen? Again, we see Jehoshaphat asking for a prophet of the Lord. And who do they say is close by or around that they can go talk to? Elisha. So Elisha is going to talk to them, or they're going to go to Elisha to have him talk to them to give a prophecy about what's going to happen in this battle. How's Elisha's interaction with them? Yeah, Elisha's pretty blunt. You know, we see Elijah being pretty direct in his dealings with people. We see the same kind of spirit from Elisha here. Because these kings, the three kings, come to Elisha and say, you know, what are we going to do here in this battle? And Elisha immediately says, what have I got to do with you? Go back to your mother and your father and ask their gods. I mean, he's throwing it right back to Joram, saying, go back and talk to your gods. But they press him, and he says, because Jehoshaphat is here, and only because Jehoshaphat is here, I will talk to you. Again, what does that speak about Jehoshaphat? Very good, very good. I appreciate you bringing that up, because I was going to get to the water thing, but you're right, that actually took place before they went to talk to Elisha. So again, picture this kind of a battle scene. You've got these three armies, Israel, Judah, and the army of Edom, coming to the place of the battle, and there's 7 days' journey. But what does it say that's behind them or they got with them? Their cattle. They've got all their flocks with them. So for us today, that's really hard for us to understand or think about that kind of warfare. You know, we see as we read through some of these stories that after the battle's over, there's lots of spoils. They go and they spend time taking the garments and the gold and the various things and the livestock from the enemy. And here you've got three armies just traveling down. And they got all their cattle with them. So again, that's a really different concept for us to think about in how this warfare takes place and what all's going on at this time. But 7 days journey, no water for the animals, no water for the men. They go to talk to Elisha about it. And how does Elisha say after he interfaces with them and says, okay, Jehoshaphat's here, I'll talk to you. What does Elisha ask for? A minstrel. Somebody to come and play an instrument. Okay? And that's what's going to help Elisha have communication with the Lord. Is this minstrel is going to be played, and then the word of the Lord is going to come to Elisha. Now, when the word of the Lord comes to Elisha, what's the response from God? What does he say?
This valley full of trenches.
Okay, make this valley full of trenches. Okay, why? All right, so let's look at chapter 3 and begin in verse 16. Because I want us to look at some details here of how this battle goes about and some of the things that are said here. He said, thus says the Lord, make this valley full of trenches, as Brad just said. For thus says the Lord, you shall not see wind, nor shall you see rain. Yet that valley shall be filled with water, so that you shall drink, both you and your cattle and your beast. Verse 18, I want you to notice what's said here. This is but a slight thing in the sight of the Lord. He will also give the Moabites into your hand. This is nothing for God to do here. This is a slight thing. Oh, and by the way, you're going to have Moab army put into your hands. I'm going to give them to you. All right. And then he continues on with a little more detail in verse 19. Then you shall strike every fortified city, every choice city, fell every good tree, stop all the springs of water, and mar every good piece of land with stones. Let's just think about that. How difficult would that be? You're going to dig a bunch of trenches in preparation for battle. And then once the battle is started and you fighting the Moabites, you're going to go into all their cities, fortified cities, you're going to destroy them. You're going to go into their choice cities, you're going to destroy them. You're going to go and chop down every tree. You're going to take rocks and you're going to put rocks all in all the good ground. That's a lot of work. But we're going to see what happens. They're going to do it. So as the prophecy continues, the Moabites heard in verse 21, the kings had come up to fight against them. All who were able to put on armor, old, were summoned and stood on the border. They rose early in the morning and the sun shone on the water, because early that morning at the time of the sacrifice, where did the water come from? Came by the way of Edom, filled all the trenches. The men, the beast, the animals, all was able to drink from this water. But when the sun came up, the Moabites looked down on it. It looked like blood. And they said, look, they've killed themselves. Let's go to the spoils. So they're going into this campment of these three nations thinking that they're all dead. You think they were ready for battle when they got there? Moabites were not ready. And the Israelites, Judah, and Edomites all rose up and struck them. And they struck them fiercely. And in verse 25, thus they destroyed the cities. Each one threw a stone on every good piece of good land and filled it. They stopped all the springs of water, felled all the good trees, until in Kir Hereseth, only they left its stones wherever the slingers went about it and struck it. When the king of Moab saw the battle was too fierce for him, he tried to break through with 700 men to get to the king of Edom, but he failed. So battle is won. God says, I'm going to give them to you. And he does. So that prophecy that Elisha tells them takes place. Any questions or comments through the end of lesson number 6? God's hand is very evident here in these battles and the things that take place. It's a lot of work, but the people do it. They went through and they destroyed the cities, they destroyed the trees, filled the springs, did all the things that was asked of them, and they got to win the battle with the hand of God.
You have the contrast to Balaam and how he treats his worshipers, how successful he is with them, no matter what their sacrifice is to him, which is what the king did with his eldest son, was not successful either. And as compared to God,
right.
Not the kind of sacrifices that they try to do for their idol.
Yeah, and you're making reference there at the end to the sacrificing his oldest son. Yeah. So, God has a plan. God has means for things to be done the way that he wants them done. And if you do them his way, they'll be successful. All right, if you don't mind, move over to lesson number 7. Back there for me, Bryce. So we're going to take a break from the storyline that we've been going through. As you probably noticed in the readings through this part of Kings, we see that we're dumped in with a bunch of miracles that are performed by Elisha at this time. And there's quite a few of them that's listed. You know, looking back at some of the material that Mr. Waldron put out, you know, he makes reference, I think there was 5 miracles that were recorded that Elijah did. And some of those were grand miracles. We see now that we're getting into some of the things that Elisha has done. Now, I want us to take time to look through each one of them and kind of understand the purpose of them, understand what they are, and maybe help us understand what Elisha's purpose was in doing these miracles for the people of the land. So, we're going to work on that part of this evening. We've got about 10 minutes left in class. We'll start into this, and then we'll continue on through lesson 7, probably Sunday, and then work towards lesson number 8. And I'll hopefully have some more material in about a week for you to prepare as we move on forward. So, go back to 2 Kings chapter 2. And we kind of went past this in the timeline as we got to chapter 3 with the Moab battle. But after Elisha is made the prophet of the Lord, he takes the place of Elijah. We see a couple of things that he does here in chapter 2, verses 19 through 22. So he purifies water. How is this accomplished? Very good answer. Through the Lord. Because there's absolutely no way salt is going to purify water. Mike can boil it to purify it, but not salt. But the city was grand, the city was fine, the people come and said, hey, this is good land, but it's unfruitful. It's not producing anything because it had bad water. And Elisha says, get a new jar of salt, bring it to me. And he takes that salt and says, thus says the Lord, I have purified these waters. There not shall not be from their death or unfruitfulness any longer. And it says from the writing here, the waters were purified unto this day. So when this was written, they were still purified waters in this land. Again, did the salt have anything to do with the water being purified? I think these are very good stories to note, because God's power is in play here through Elisha. Elisha has a relationship with God. He makes a prayer to God, and these things are accomplished through the power of God. May seem minute, but this is a statement for us. God is all-powerful, and he can do anything, including make waters pure from salt. All right? Second one is the youth acting bad. What happens to Elisha here? Yep, spitting image of Sam. Okay, so as Sam rendered it, plain and simple, group of young lads come out and start mocking him, calling him, go up bald head, go up bald head. And we see at the end of this, it's a large number. Because it says the bears mauled 42 of them of their number, which means there was probably more than 42. So we see a group of young kids acting badly, being disrespectful to a man of God. And how does Elisha deal with it? Turns around and curses them, and God sends a bear to maul them. Not a big story that we see very often, but just think about the application for us. If we are not nice to somebody, what can happen to us? We can have some bad things happen to us because we're not nice to somebody. Like these kids weren't nice to Elisha. We can have some consequences from that. You go to school, or you go to work, and you're not nice to somebody, somebody else may see it. So we need to take these kind of stories like this and apply them to ourselves. We need to be nice. We need to be kind. Don't do like these young lads. Because the consequences that they suffered from being ugly to Elisha was pretty severe. Right.
And our youth need to learn those lessons. Because, most of us have had experiences that there was someone in the crowd who stood up for what was right.
Right, yes, agreed. I think if somebody takes a stand for what is right, they're not going to always win, but they can sure make an influence or make a difference in what takes place. You know, this story that I see here about these youths, we see stories on the news, if you watch the news, about these mob groups going and robbing stores in some of these big cities. You may have heard about some of these taking place, but there'll be a group of 30, 40, 50 people, not kids, but adults, going into a convenience store or a Walmart or something, and just going in and just taking what they can get and walking out. This kind of reminds me of that kind of picture. This group of people, they're all together, they're all doing the same thing, not good things, but they're united in this evil that they're doing. And as Sam made mention, we've got to stand up for the truth. We've got to be the one to step up and say, nope, this is not right. We don't need to do this. Because there's consequences for the things that are happening. Now, any other comments before we go to three? Yeah, man, three hands. So, Matt. Yeah, very, very, very true. Jim?
I was thinking, too, about, you know, Elisha's proving that he is who he says he is. Thinking, too, about even number one, you know, tells them to do this, but that's all this water.
Yeah, and that's why it's so good for us to do this. Trevor, I'll get you real quick. Very good, very good. Thank you for your comments and your time this evening. Pick up with question three.